That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
It's Totally 80s, the podcast dedicated to the music of the greatest decade ever. So, turn up your Walkman, loosen that scrunchie, and get ready to talk 80s with your host, Lindsay Parker.
Hi, I'm Lindsay Parker from Yahoo Entertainment, and welcome back to Totally 80s. We love hearing from you, so why not take a second to follow us at Totally 80s on Facebook and Instagram, or you can also email us your comments and show ideas to podcast@totally80s.com. So the beat goes on, so to speak. We were having so much fun discussing the best drummers of the 1980s on our last episode that we just had to make this a two-parter. I called an audible and begged my guests from last time to come back, and thankfully they cleared their schedules to make it happen. So please welcome back to the show two superstar drummers who both just happen to be neck and neck on Rolling Stone's list of the top 100 drummers of all time, of any decade. So you know these guys know their stuff. First, we have an industry legend who's played with everyone from famously John Mellencamp to Bruce Springsteen, Jon Bon Jovi, Meatloaf, Bob Seger, Neil Diamond, Sting, even the great drummer himself, Ringo Starr. It's Rolling Stone's number 66 drummer of all time, Kenny Aronoff.
What's up?
And also joining me is a man who's drummed for everyone from Post Malone to Halsey to Miley Cyrus to Ozzy Osbourne, Iggy Pop. And he does all that when he's not focused on his day job, which just happens to be as the drummer for the Red Hot Chili Peppers, Rolling Stone's number 64 drummer of all time, Mr. Chad Smith.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. So let's jump right back into the discussion. We sort of got into a little bit of who the more underrated drummers are of the 80s. So let's keep that discussion going. Why don't you guys tell me who you think some of the unsung drummers are from the decade?
Larry Mullins Jr.
Yeah. And you too. Yeah. I'm really sad that he's not going to be part of these shows that you two are doing in Vegas later this year because he's recovering from, I believe, a back injury. But yeah, he, just so you know, he just made it onto Rolling Stone's list. Yeah. You and Chad can fill in for you.
Chad and I.
We do. That's what we do.
We're the sub-brothers, the sub-brothers.
Not step-brothers, sub-brothers.
Sub-brothers.
In the meantime, Larry Mullen is number 96 on Rolling Stone's list.
96!
For those who care. Just two spots above Steven Adler, by the way, at number 98. I have my list.
See, that's another drummer. That's another drummer that you can't play like him. He has a swing. He's got a thing. You know, and what people don't realize is that the drummer is like an engine in a car. You take the engine out, put another engine in, car ain't the same. Mm-hmm. And so how much did these drummers, I dare you, ask Axl Rose what he thinks of Steven Adler. He thought he was great because he had this swing and it made him be able to sing a certain way. It's mm-hmm. way more involved than just how much technique you have. There's all this other stuff going on.
Well, I have an honorable mention for the list that Chad might appreciate because I'm a child of the 80s. I grew up in front of the television set in the 80s. How many kids do you think grew up in the 80s who decided to take up the drums because of Animal from the Muppets? He was like the role model for a lot of Gen X drummers, I imagine.
Well,
I know it's a random question, but I know you have an animal jacket. I've seen you wear it. Right?
I love Animal. Who doesn't love animals?
Yeah, I know.
The best Animal, you know, I mean, I would, is he still going? Do you know?
Animal will never quit. Animal is still going as far as I know.
Buddy Rich had the drum battle, like a famous drum battle with Animal. Like, that would be a real bucket list for me to go to, you know, anyone on Sesame Street? Anybody?
I think Dave Grohl actually.
He battled? Of course he did.
But wait, the Chili Peppers were supposed to be on Sesame Street and got turned down. This is
got turned down because they didn't like some of our antics.
I think you're the only artist to be turned down.
It was your antics.
No.
I think it was the socks. I think they only like socks if they're sock puppets, not socks.
Yeah, right? That's before my time. I mean,
who was the drummer that played Animal's parts? Because that guy was bad mofo.
Yeah, good question. I don't know.
That guy was a bad mofo.
Yeah. Yeah. He's definitely underrated. He should be up high on the Rolling Stone.
I have to look that up, but
I heard that he was supposedly a cross between Ginger Baker and Keith Moon were their inspirations for Animal. Do you know, is that right, Lindsay, or you don't know?
We've talked about this before. I definitely obviously see the Keith Moon thing because of the personality being animalistic and crazy. I'm actually looking this up right now. The drumming was performed by a guy named Ronnie Verrell up until Ronnie died in 2002. He was an English jazz drummer. He drummed in a bunch of famous big bands. He was born in 1926, so he was, you know, already a seasoned drummer by the time. He drummed for Jack Parnell, and he provided the drumming for Animal. We now know, and he's number one on the most underrated list. The guy who gave Animal his sound, his feel. You can't teach that in a drum clinic, how to drum like a Muppet. I'm glad we cleared this up. I feel like, you know, Animal.
Dude, well, when Modern Drummer was like the thing, he should have gotten the cover one.
Right? Sure. I mean, in point, Lindsay, he's at like how many kids? And that's when you get inspired, whether it's watching Ed Sullivan Show or watching MTV and Tommy Lee Spinning or whatever it is. You have many kids watching
something?
Come on, who doesn't want to do that?
I know.
Fucking awesome.
I feel since you're the sub guy, since I don't know who's replaced this guy, Ronnie, since he passed 20 years ago to play Animal, like one of you should be the new Animal, the new voice, the new drumming voice, the new heartbeat of Animal. I feel like we should just put that out there and like make
Kenny could do it. I couldn't do it.
No, I also think the drumming battle should happen between you guys and Animal.
Yeah,
that would be great.
Who would win?
Animal.
See, I'm putting you on that. You are a well-connected woman of power and influence in the music industry.
I actually saw the Dr. Teeth band and the Muppets perform at Hollywood Bowl. They did like Anna at Outside Lands. They did a full-on show and someone's playing Animal. Might as well be one of you guys. They do concerts.
Hey, I just thought of another drummer that, he's probably not on the list, but he's might be underrated because the parts are simple, but the feel is amazing. And it's Stan Lynch from The Petty.
Oh, yeah. That whole band is amazing.
Dude, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
We used to sit there and listen to those albums. We go like, why is it so great? And we couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. Another amazing field drummer. What about Max Weinberg?
Oh, yeah. Another one. Yeah. Holy shit.
And by the way, Max Weinberg is on Rolling Stones list at number 55. But we haven't really talked about... we've talked about a lot of men, and we've talked about a Muppet who...
Yeah, let's talk about the ladies.
Well, there's, I hate to say it. Obviously, there's a lot of great female drummers, but there weren't. Gina Schauch. Let's talk about Gina Schauch.
Yeah, she's probably number one, the most popular.
Great. You know what? So much that Mellencamp brought her into our studio to record, and I had to watch. And I was going, what the?
When was that?
They brought her in. I don't think she made the record, but it was the after American Fool, we were doing Pink Houses, the Aham record. He brought her in.
He was always like up your ass, man. Wow.
Totally.
Wow.
Totally. If he thought he could do it, which he could, he did it.
We'd do it.
I would sit on the opposite end of the plane.
You can't shit on a plane. You can't shit on the plane. The plane rule.
I didn't shit on a plane. I sat
on a plane.
Oh.
Sit on a plane.
You know how I got back even with him once? The co-pilot said, "Hey, take the wheel," and I'm flying, and John's in the back, and I turn around. He says, "What? Why is it getting so bumpy?" And I turn my head around like Jack Nicholson in The Shining with that crazy look. he said, "Johnny's here," or whatever, and John freaked out. He came up and he wanted to hit me, but if he hit me, I'm flying, so he couldn't. That's how I got back to him.
Damn.
I was never allowed to get anywhere near that cockpit.
Yeah.
Sheila E. Can we talk about Sheila E. for a second? And Karen Carpenter, too, who, only died in 83.
She was incredible. She could do Buddy Rich stuff.
See, there's some clips on the old YouTube of her.
Yeah.
tearing it up.
And like, Sheila E., I did an interview recently for Sheila E., tragically, the 40th anniversary of Karen Carpenter passing away. And Sheila E. said that was the first female drummer she ever saw on TV and one of her biggest inspirations. Sheila E., anytime you want to talk to Sheila E. about Karen Carpenter, she will say yes. She loves to give her a shout out. And Sheila E. was, I think, probably that for, you know, a lot of, again, Gen X kids sitting in front of TV. They're watching MTV and they're seeing this glamorous, you know, literally glamorous. She had a song called Glamorous Life, but you're seeing this glamorous woman who's drumming standing up and she's in like all the, you know, the Prince looking costumes and, you know, just being badass. And, you know, she's drummed for so many people. She drummed on the Oscars, you know, for that Under the Sea. So like, do you have, she's at number 58 on the list.
You know, who else did people talk about? They kind of, but it is, you know, it for metal guys. I would say Dave Lombardo from Slayer.
Oh, dude,
where's he?
47.
Yeah, he and What about Nico McBrain? Nico, is he?
But he's with Iron Man. Is he on it?
I don't think I saw him on.
Lars.
He's on our list. He's on our list. Lars was not on Rolling Stone's list. I don't think. I don't think he was because I didn't write a note. I had his name down on my notes, but I did not put a number next to
him. Why does Lars get shit on so much?
I don't know because, you know, you were talking about Tommy Lee earlier, and Lars is another one of those drummers who is also a star, and people know him as well as they know anyone else, or maybe even better than they know
I'm the best drummer.
I mean, I'll double check, you know, like, but I don't remember seeing him on the list. I feel like I remember actually like looking for him and being like, that's weird. Why is he not on? We'll talk about his drumming for a minute. And like, you know, he's obviously a heavy hitter.
Metallica, you know, that band in the 80s, they changed, you know, their style of music and those first three records and Master of Puppets, Ride the Lightning, the drumming, the playing, the whole thing. Like no one was doing that.
Yeah.
So it's like it's the parts that he came up with and like, it's really, really like special stuff. So, you know, that to me, like that alone, and look, they've been a band for what, 40 years?
Yeah, I found this. I found this on Reddit. Someone is mad. They actually were complaining that Lars, it says this, I found this. I just Googled this literally as we were talking. Rolling Stone creates the list of the 100 best drummers of all time, and Lars Ulrich is not included. What the fuck? I agree. Surprising.
If you don't like his personality or his thing or Napster, whatever.
Napster bad.
Yeah, just from, you know, I know people like on him, but just from like a drumming standpoint alone, like, come on, like, really? They're still selling out stadiums around the world and putting out new music. Come on.
Exactly.
The haters will hate. I get it. But like,
it's definitely a big omission for sure. Number 70 on Rolling Stones list was Tommy Ramone from the Ramones.
Oh, dude. Go ahead. Try to play like him.
Exactly. That's another one. That's another like a Phil Rudd type drummer. Dare
you to try to play like that? You'll
I tried,
out. Dude. I can't keep that with one hand.
People who aren't drummers or don't know much about drumming probably think it's easy to drum like that because it's deceptively simple sounding to the ear. Their songs, at least, but it's not easy. Apparently,
no.
He's a great drummer, 100%. And he didn't even want to be the drummer.
Is that
he wasn't the drummer?
He didn't. Whoa.
No, he was like the producer, kind of like.
Oh,
they,
wow.
And they didn't. Yeah, they didn't have a drummer, and they're like, he goes, "I'll play."
Wow. All right, Tony Thompson, Chic, Power Station in the 80s, of course.
I was a friend of his. He was incredible. Power Station, the Chic, big drum sound. That big drum sound he got.
I was really, I'm a huge Duran Duran fan, which Chad well knows. And I was really happy when Power Station started because a lot of kind of these snobby people who are dismissing Duran Duran as a boy band at that time saw that John and Andy Taylor got with all those people in Power Station with Tony, with Robert Palmer, of course, and realized, oh, they're actually like legitimate players if they're playing with people like that. So I was very happy that Power Station sort of upped Duran Duran's cred for sure. Clem Burke from Blondie is on the list.
Oh my God. How do we forget about him?
Yeah, exactly.
He's number 61, which is three slots above you, Chad, and five slots above you, Kenny.
Okay.
You're in the 60s. The 60s is a good group to be in.
He's amazing. I mean, what would Blondie would not be the same without him drumming?
Nope. No.
And then one spot above him, a 70s artist, 60s artist, but obviously had a lot of hits in the 80s as well. Mick Fleetwood is a number six.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
Come I'm making on. You guys so mad. It's
oh,
not my
list. Oh, my God. He's great.
Like, duh.
Duh. I know. He's so big, we couldn't see him.
Exactly. And I know there's going to be more coming.
Oh, dude, that Mick Fleetwood, I mean, those parts, I've had to play those parts when I was in the Music Cares honoring Fleetwood Mac, and I had to write, I'm like, what? Where's beat one?
You were at that event? That was like the last time that Lindsey Buckingham and Stevie Nicks ever appeared together.
I played at that one. I played with like nine artists at Radio City Music Hall. Were you there?
I wasn't. I wish I had been, of course, obviously, because, you know, Christine McVie is gone and Lindsey and Stevie no longer are in the lineup together. Although, you know, I did like the Fleetwood Mac lineup, speaking of the Heartbreakers that had Mike Campbell in it and also had Neil Finn in it.
I got another drummer, Don Henley.
Oh, yeah. Obviously, I think of him in the 80s, at least, as more of a, just a pop star almost. But
Yeah, because Don Henley was more himself, not in the Eagles in the 80s. But so what? Dude, those parts and singing?
Yeah.
Oh, we're getting into singing. And
that's what
drumming.
I wanted to ask about.
Levon Helm. Come on, try to play like him.
How hard? I mean, I know this is a naive question, but as I've made very clear, I'm not a drummer or a musician myself. Like, you know, we've mentioned Phil Collins also as well. Like, I mentioned Sheila E. How hard is it to drum and sing at the same time? It seems like it would be hard. It's like walking and chewing gum, but like on steroids. How hard is that?
I can't do. I mean, I can go,
That's exactly. I learned what he did in Chicken Foot. You go, yeah.
Oh, yeah! I can do football vocals. Man, I used to watch Taylor sing and play, Taylor Hawkins. And he, you know, he's very energetic and he's playing all this, like, it's like high in Foo Fighters, high energy and like his side bands and stuff. And it's just like another muscle, you know, you get used to it. And you know, it's just, to me, it's like, that takes a lot of energy, a lot of breath and and then you're exerting that physical energy playing the drums. This is what he did. It was really something to me. I was like, wow, man, I don't know what you're doing that.
I know. To me, too. I thought the same thing. Insane. It's actually another limb. I mean, literally, it's another two hands, two feet, and then the voice.
I'm curious how hard it is. I don't know how much experience you guys have doing this, but standing and drumming, we mentioned Sheila E. Another one that comes to mind is Slim Jim Phantom from the Stray Cats with kind of do that standing and drumming. Is that easier or harder? Do you guys ever play that way?
Nope.
It's on me either, but I would imagine the hardest part is that bass drum.
Right?
How do you get the pedal to come off?
I don't know.
That's weird.
He's great at it.
I know.
Like, obviously, he was doing that a long time. Did you ever ask him, Lindsey, like when he started playing standing up, was he ever a sit-down drummer?
Actually, I think you and I talked to him about that on Sirius, but I forget the name, but he saw it like in a photo of like some famous 50s drummer you might offhand know, but like, you know, someone who played with like Eddie Cochran or Buddy Holly or someone like that. I'm sorry, I don't have it at the top of mind, but he like literally saw it in a photo of these artists, these rockabilly artists that he idolized and just imitated because he thought it looked cool. I don't think it was like he wasn't thinking it would like sound better or be easier or anything, but it stuck. And then it kind of was how he drummed from most of the time from then on, but it was for the look of it. He just thought it looked really cool. And this, like on the back of an album cover, he saw it, I believe.
I can see like Brian Setzer says, I'm looking for a drummer who can stand. They auditioned 50 drummers. Nobody can play.
There aren't that many. The other one I can think of is more 90s, but like Andy Sturmer from Jellyfish, who, you know, was the front man of Jellyfish. He stood and drummed. He sang and stood and drummed at the same time. It's not common. It's definitely not common that we're like struggling to think of another person. I want to, you know, just mention one more other artist that was on or drummer that was on this list, this Rolling Stone list, because we were talking about Zappa earlier. And being a child of the 80s, I came across this person via Missing Persons, which is Terry Bozzi.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I thought about Terry. You're right. But I forgot, like, of course, Missing Persons. And like, you know, he was a huge part of that. Being a drummer out front kind of guy, a la Tommy Lee. He was so physical and so, you know, incredible.
And that, from what I recall, like Missing Persons kind of got a little bit of, you know, cred among, you know, the classic rockers or the prog rockers or whatever, who normally wouldn't give a new wave, quote unquote, new wave band fronted by someone who looked like Dale a chance because of this Zappa connection, because of Warren Cucurillo and Terry Bozzio being in the band. So
they were musically, they were, you know.
Oh my God. Yeah. That first record.
Amazing. Like her voice was like, you know, is what it is, kind of, you know, unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some people like it, some people don't. It happens. But like the band and the music, oh, next level. Like,
yeah, next level.
Not your simple, this is the best I can do. Like, those guys can do anything.
And she was kind of like the original Lady Gaga. Look at pictures of Dale in the 80s and don't tell me. I love Lady Gaga. I'm not giving Lady Gaga any shade, but the resemblance, I don't think is coincidental. Had to have been an inspiration to her. Had to have been.
Oh, yeah. She looks like a smaller version of Lady Gaga yeah. with the, you know, the way she dressed and everything. You're absolutely yeah. right. I agree.
Yeah, absolutely.
That first record was like, I learned every note off of that.
Really?
Yeah.
What's the record that has U.S. Drag and Walking in L.A.?
I think that's the first one.
Yeah, that
the first one?
First full length, yeah. First full,
yeah, they had the EP.
That's right, they had the EP.
Yeah, I had the EP. I had it. I was a big fan. I like Boys. I liked that song. I like Boys. I did. I do.
Did you see them in their heyday, Lindsay?
I did not see them. I was a bit too young. But I remember, as a quick aside, because I grew up in LA, as you know, when that song came out, not being of driving age yet, I did not understand what that meant when they said, like, nobody walks in LA. I took it, like, really literally, like, nobody, like, everyone's in, you know, wheelchairs or in hovercrafts. Like, no one actually, like, puts one foot in front of the other and walks in LA. I get it now. I get it now. And I always like the line, I think, I'll dye my hair blue from Words. I never dyed. I did dye my hair blue, actually, at some point. It's not blue at the moment, but I did it one
color.
Final.
What color hasn't your hair been?
Green. It's never been green. It's a hard color to pull off. It's not, I don't think it would go with my skin tone. You know, that's for the hair color podcast. But like, yeah, it's a hard color to pull off. But I've done it pretty much every other color there is. And Dale probably inspired the blue, and Missing Persons were, you know, thanks to Terry or her then husband.
It was blonde and then it was just a blue streak.
Yeah. And she just looked like a piece of like candy or like a Christmas present or something. She used to be like wrapped up in cellophane and like electrical tape. Kind of like a Wendy Williams look.
Wendy O.
Yeah, and it was a good look. It was a good look. Well, I want to wrap up by asking you guys. I started off by saying that on this controversial Rolling Stone list, you were at number 66 and number 64, which, you know, could be up for debate whether you should be higher up or not. But you did make a pretty illustrious list of the 100 greatest drummers of all time, according to Rolling Stone. And that was, you know, and you're of just a handful of 80s drummers that we've kind of discussed here today. How do you feel about being on that list with all these people and in the place you're at? How does it feel?
You go, Chad, first.
I don't put a lot of you know into the list. I didn't, and you know this about me, Lindsay. You like the award shows and the, you know, the
Hall of Fame and all of that. I get very invested.
I know that's your thing. I get it. I don't, but you know, it's always nice to be recognized, you know, by whomever, you know. But like, it's probably some fucking pencil pushing whatever nerds and who knows, but again, it's like I'm just happy to have a job and be playing and doing what I love to do, and people want to, you know, come to see us and Chili Peppers, and I get to play with my friends and do what I love, and so, you know, that's great. But the haters, I always get the Kenny doesn't, because Ken, I don't think so, because Ken's like, he could do anything and has proven that many, many times. Most people are like, oh, I don't really, Chad's overrated and he just plays beat over and over and the Chili Peppers aren't that good. Like, they're always going to say, that's okay.
I get that.
I'm not, look, Kenny and I, we don't play for drummers. We play for the people that want to make the music, that want to tap their feet, that want to fucking do this and do this. I'm not playing for drummers. I love the drums, and I'm amazed by the technical ability of everybody. And some of these guys are technically, that's why they're on the list. But, like, I just want to make it feel good, play what's right for the song, have fun with my friends, And if I can just do that.
I think that's what drumming's all about. It's probably the most collaborative. I mean, I know people do drum solos, you know, drum solos are a thing, and certainly was a thing in the 80s.
That's fine. But then what about the other, you know, 2 hours? It's like you need the drums. It's basically an accompanying instrument. You need other people to play with.
There's no question the drummer will motivate the band, which motivates the audience. And then it goes back and forth. Then when the audience is motivated, and, you know, humans are feeling creatures. They can feel it and see it. And they may not be able to define it. So the drummer's making the band. Hey, Chad, you know how I sometimes will play left hand on the hi-hat and I'll raise my right hand? You know where that came from? We were all hungover. We were on tour playing in arenas. The band's hungover. I'm like, I knew John was going to blow a gasket if we didn't kick ass. So I started playing left-handed and pounding the snare drum with my right hand to wake everybody up. And then it became a thing.
Do that thing.
Yeah, then the audience is going, oh, yeah. They're all going like that. And I went, okay.
That works.
Because we're all... So what I'm saying, that's energy. Mm-hmm. Audience feels it. Band feels it. The band was all hungover. All of a sudden, like, holy shit, we got to get our asses in gear. And then the audience feels it. That's what a drummer does.
Can I end this, I mean, by asking you guys for your definitive 80s moment of your respective careers? If you haven't already, we've heard some good stories already, but is there one moment? I know that, obviously, Chad, you joined the Peppers at sort of the tail end of the 80s. You were in other bands before that, one of which I remember opened for The Alarm at one time in Michigan.
Toby Red.
There you go. Toby Red. But what is like your definitive 80s moment? It could be a certain concert. It could be a certain song. Certain, you know, just anything. That top, you
well,
know.
For me, mine didn't come so much with drumming, but from drumming. Playing in not with the Chili Peppers before in the band that opened for The Alarm. You know, early on, I wanted to play drums. I love playing music, but I wanted to get girls. And so this girl we were playing, yeah. So this girl came to the bar we were playing at in Detroit, and I'd seen her a few times, and I was always kind of chat her up and talk to her. And finally, like, tonight's going to be the night. Like, I can tell it's going to happen. We go, I drive her home, I'm really drunk. One thing leads to another, boom, boom, boom. I go to jail and-
Wait, one thing leads to another, I go to jail? You skipped over something.
I'm gonna skip over the stop in the middle of the road in the snowstorm. You know, I gotta skip over that part.
All right.
I have my leather pants around my knees, I hit a car, next thing you know. Anyway.
As one does, next thing you know.
I literally was in jail for 30 days.
Holy cow.
You're talking to a hardened criminal.
30, that's like too much.
I feel like maybe that's the note to end it on, like the bad boy drummer, the wild forgotten 80s. Like what an 80s story.
That's it. That's what I remember. And then it was like, I got to get the fuck out of Michigan because I wouldn't get a driver's license for 5 years. And this is at the time my friend lived in California. He's like, you just go to the DMV and it says, have you had a license before? And you don't check the box and they give you one. I'm like, I'm in.
Gotta love Hollywood, man. And that's what led you to LA. And that's how you ended up in the Red Hot Chili Peppers, because you got arrested in a snowstorm while trying to get with some chick.
Try.
That's my boy. That's my boy. Yeah. Go,
yes,
Chad.
No.
That's my boy. I was going to say, you know, my 80s thing was Jack and Diane, but now I got to join in with Chad. I got to.
What about the Siebel Townhouse?
Oh, dude. This is where Chad and I met.
All right.
Well, our room.
Door. He slipped a note under the door of my room saying, keep it down with your boyfriend and you know, one of those.
He was next door. We were next door to each other.
Really?
1992, 93, 92?
91, 92.
Woo!
And the Chili Peppers were just exploding, and we were already happening, and they came to the concert.
Dude, that's when you did two sets, and when we're chatting at the intermission, you're like, yeah. John's coming through the hallway. It's really weird, but can you face the wall?
Yeah, dude, I remember, and then I remember what's his name was playing on the piano, making fun of him, playing Pink Houses.
Yeah, funny was. They were like, the manager's like, Don Cougar's coming down.
Yeah.
Everyone gotta leave and don't make icon. Like, it was fucking Elvis Presley. So we're like, fuck this. What is John Cougar? He's a fuck.
Exactly.
We're in the lobby. Yeah. Only thing in the lobby was a piano, and he goes over to the piano, and Cougar's coming down with like his girlfriend or wife, and it's all like, you know, security. And he's like, did a Pink House here? Yeah.
I was going, yeah. I thought that was so cool.
And it all led to this moment of you, totally 80s, talking about Animal from the Muppets. It all led to this. It was fate.
I got arrested. At a gig once.
Well, now you say that, I have to hear that story.
All right, I'll just go real quick. Because, I mean, I want to be like buddies with Chad in that same realm. I don't want to leave him in jail by himself. I didn't make it to jail, but I said to John, we were at, what's that place in Chicago? Outdoor Arena, it's like 30,000, The World or something.
Yeah.
Anyway,
yeah.
We're playing out there. I said, John, I've been wearing the same clothes, a baseball cap backwards, tank top and, you know, like workout shorts and high tops. I'm getting rid of this shit. I'm going to throw my stuff in the audience. And he says, don't do it. I'm like, no, I'm doing it. I told him a week before I was going to do it. John's thinking, So I walk out for the encore. So I'm doing it. He says, nah, don't do it. I said, fuck that. Took shirt, threw it off. Took my sneakers. Only thing left I had was boxer shorts on. And I'm playing. Yeah, people got all the sweaty clothes are going out there. I go off stage. Some guy comes up to me in a jacket, tie, says, hey, are you the drummer? I'm like, yeah. You want me to sign something? He pulls out a badge, says, you can't take your clothes off here in Illinois, you know. I'm like, what? And then John steps in, and then the promoter comes in and starts the whole scene. It was all staged, but I didn't know that. He fucking handcuffs me. I'm handcuffed, and I'm being brought backstage to a room, and I'm crapping in my pants. I said to him, hey, listen, you know, I'm actually an honorary deputy in, which I had a badge from Indiana. He says, I don't give a fuck about Indiana. You're in Illinois, boy. And I'm like, oh. So I get in there. They leave me in there. I'm handcuffed in my, you know, boxer shorts. All of a sudden, another cop comes in. It's a female cop. And then she says, you're in deep shit. I'm like, what the? I mean, come on. She takes her hat off and the hair comes down.
It was a stripper?
Yep. Now, mind you, my girlfriend's out on the other side of the door. I'm running around like a chicken. Like, hey, come on. You can't do this. She says, listen, I ain't leaving until I'm doing this.
I've got orders from your boss.
Yeah. Well, then John walks in with Elaine Irwin and his girlfriend. How's it going, Kenny? How's it going? They're like, oh, God, the things we have to do.
The 80s were a magical time. They were the best of times. I've had the best of time talking with you guys. This has been so much fun. You guys really do, you know, keep it funky. This was a good time. So a special thanks to Kenny Aronoff and Chad Smith and to everyone out there listening. Remember to give us Totally 80s some love with a rate and review on your favorite podcast platform. And I will catch you next time.
This was Totally 80s, the podcast dedicated to the music of the greatest decade ever. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Totally 80s. And please leave us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Until our next episode, catch you on the flip side.